おさはなばばと、さはなおぶなっと、さはべじゃんたらばばへい、てじゃすみなばでたますと、まべびしゃばへい。おしゃんと、しゃんと、しゃんと。
त्वं यदस्य देवेष्वथनु मीमांस्यमेव ते मन्ये विदितम् नाहं मन्ये सु वेदेति नो न वेदेति वेद च यो नस्तद्वेद तद्वेद नो न वेदेति वेद च यस्य मतं तस्य मतं मतं यस्य न वेदसः अविज्ञातं विजानतां विज्ञातमविजानताम् प्रतिबोधविदितं मतममृतत्वं हि विन्दते आत्मना विन्दते वीर्यं विद्यया विन्दते मृतम् इह चेदवेदी दथ सत्यमस्ति न चेदिहा वेदी महती विनष्टिः भूतेषु भूतेषु विचित्य धीरा प्रेत्यात्मा लोकादमृता भवन्ति ब्रह्महद्देवेभ्यो विजिज्ञे तस्यः ब्रह्मणो विजये देवामहीयन्त स ऐक्षन्तात्माकमेवायं विजयोऽस्माकमेवायं महिमेति तद्वैषां विजज्ञौ देभ्योः प्रादुर्बभूव तन्न व्यजानत किमिदं यक्षमिति तेऽग्निमब्रुवन् जातवेद एतद्विजानीहि किमेतद्यक्षमिति कथेति तदभ्यद्रवत्समभ्यवदत् कोऽसीत्यग्निर्वा अहमस्मीत्यब्रवीज्जातवेदा वा अहमस्मीति तस्मिन् गुस्त्वयि किं वीर्यमित्यपीदगो सर्वं दहेयं यदिदं पृथिव्यामिति तस्मै तृणं निदधावे तद्दहेति तदुपप्रेयाय सर्वजगेन तन्न शशाक दग्धुं ततत एव निववृतेनैतदशकं विज्ञातुं यदेतद्यक्षमिति अथ वायुमब्रुवन् वायवे तद्विजानीहि किमेतद्यक्षमिति तथेति तदभ्यद्रवत्तमभ्यवदद्भोऽसीति वायुर्वा अहमस्मीत्यब्रवीन्मातरिष्वा वा अहमस्मीति तस्मिन् गुस्त्वयि किं वीर्यमित्यपीदगो सर्वमादधीय यदिदं पृथिव्यामिति तस्मै तृणं निदधावे तदा दत्स्वेति तदुपप्रेयाय सर्वजवेन तन्न शशाका दातुं सतत एव निववृतेनैतदशकं विज्ञातुं यदेतद्यक्षमिति अथेन्द्रमब्रुवन् भगवन्नेतद्विजानीहि किमेतद्यक्षमिति कथेति तदभ्यद्रवत्तस्मात्तिरोदधे स तस्मिन्नेवाकाशे स्त्रियमाजगाम बहुशोभमानामुमागुहैमवतीं तागोहोवाच किमेतद्यक्षमिति सा ब्रह्मेति होवाच ब्रह्मणो वा एतद्विजये महीयध्वमिति ततो हैव विदाञ्चकार ब्रह्मेति तस्माद्वा एते देवा अतितरामि वान्यान् देवान्यदग्निर्वायुरिन्द्रस्ते जेनन्नेदिष्ठं पस्पर्शुस्ते जेन प्रथमो विदाञ्चकार ब्रह्मेति तस्माद्वा इन्द्रोऽतितरामि वान्यान् देवान् स जेनन्नेदिष्ठं पस्पर्श स येन प्रथमो विदाञ्चकार ब्रह्मेति
स So we are in part 4, mantra 4. We had covered up to part 4, mantra 3. Now, part 3 and part 4 gives the message of the Upanishad through a story. So in the story, with the help of Brahman, the Devas conquer the Asuras. And once they are conquered, they forget the role played by Brahman and they are celebrating. They are having success party. And suddenly, in the sky they see an apparition, Yaksha. So they get worried. They think still the enemy needs to be conquered. The enemy is not conquered fully. So first Agni goes to see who it is. And when Agni goes, the Yaksha asks, who are you? And Agni says, I'm Lord Agni. And she says, what do you do? He says, I burn everything. So Yaksha puts the blade of grass and says, burn this. And Lord Agni could not burn it, comes back defeated. Same thing gets repeated when Lord Vayu goes next, the wind god. Same story, the Yaksha asks, who are you? And he says, I am Vayu. I blow everything. I toss everything. Can you toss this blade of grass? He says, yes, sir. And he could not. And he comes back defeated. Then all the Devas appeal to Lord Indra, the Lord of Devas. He goes, and when he goes there, when he gets closer to the Yaksha vanishes, disappears. But Lord Indra doesn't come back. He stays put there. He's not going to come back without knowing what that Yaksha is. So he humbles himself and stays there with Shraddha and Pratiksha. These are qualities required to gain the knowledge. So when he develops those qualities and stays there with determination, then in the place where Yaksha was, a beautiful Uma appears. Uma is daughter of Himavan, which represents Vedanta. So the Vedantic knowledge, the scriptures, the text is represented by goddess Uma. And then she tells him that was indeed Brahman. So he asks her what was that spirit, and the reply she gives in the next part. The question is there in the part 3 where Indra asks Uma, what is that spirit? What is that Yaksha? The reply to that is given by Uma in the next part, because to tell us that when we ask the question, we got to wait for the answer to flash back. It's the time that is there between knowledge and wisdom that is being explained through this gap. So Uma tells that Brahman indeed, she said, through Brahman's victory alone you have attained glory. So all the glories that we have at the material level, physical level, emotional level, intellectual level, at all levels, the glories are actually originally belonging to Brahman. And that Brahman is what is reflected through all this. So that is what Uma says. So that is Brahman's glory. Through Brahman's victory, you attained this glory. Then alone, he, Indra, understood that indeed was Brahman. Then the Upanishad says, therefore, verily these gods, Agni, Vayu, Indra, even excel other gods. So what? In between verse 1 and 2, we need to understand that Indra came back and told Agni and Vayu, who were putting some effort. They are putting some effort, but they didn't go to the end of it. So when Indra came and told them, they also understood that it was Brahman. So therefore he says, verily these gods, Agni, Vayu, Indra, even excel other gods, for they indeed approach this nearest. Thus, they indeed were the first to know Brahman. I think somebody's microphone is on. Please put yourself on mute. I don't know if I'm not the host. So whoever is the host, please put everybody in mute. Yeah. So what we need to understand is, as a human being, we have the potential to rise beyond a mundane existence. Mundane existence is to merely exist in this world, to fulfill our sensual appetite and emotional hunger and intellectual curiosity. And that's what majority of us are doing. Whole life is just fulfilling this material, sensual, emotional, intellectual pursuit. A human being has the potential to rise above just this mundane existence. And very rarely you find beings rise to that level. Majority just lives at this level. So there is this poem called Grammarian's Funeral. It's a beautiful poem. There, the poet says, the grammarian lived for a higher purpose. He says, that low man seeks little things to do, sees it and does it. The low thinking people, they just live fulfilling their mundane desires. They see it, they do it. This high man with great things to pursue dies every moment. His hat, his vision set so high. So many higher aspirations he had. So he might have not fulfilled everything before that he died. But still he is a high thinking man. This high man with great things to pursue dies ere he knows it. Dies before he knows it. That low man goes on adding one to one. A low thinking fellow keeps adding stuff at the material level. Many finite stuffs he adds. 1 + 1 + 1 + 1, he kept on adding to himself. This high man aims at a million and misses a unit. Aims at a million and misses a unit means he is set his goal so high, so he is detached from the lower things. That's how he lived. So Upanishads also say the same thing. Rare indeed is a person who sets his vision so high. And of those people who set their vision so high, rare indeed is one individual who reaches that highest. Very rare. What it's trying to tell is, very rarely a human being lives to his or her potential. We have evolved essentially from animals. The majority of us also live like animals. So, the Upanishad is saying, Agni, Vayu, Indra, they tried. In that Agni and Vayu reached a certain height and they failed. But Indra reached the highest. So, these three are great because they are at least trying. They at least went to that level. They could have failed. Trying to achieve something great and failing in that is better than just achieving something at a very low level. This is not to be confused with thinking that one should aspire more than one's level. No, that's not what he's trying to say here. Here he's just trying to say that don't stop at just that mundane existence. So, Agni, Vayu, Indra, they try to know what that Brahman is, what that Atman is. And Indra succeeded. Agni and Vayu didn't succeed. Eventually they succeeded, having heard it from Indra, they also realized, you can say so. Therefore he says, Indra excels other gods, for he approached it nearest. Thus he indeed was the first to know Brahman. So, the life's purpose is to know Brahman. See, in fact, we need to have clarity as to what is worthy of pursuing. Somewhere down the line in our life, we should have determined as to what I want to pursue. Animals meander without a purpose. They just live to fulfill their hunger. Nothing more than that they are interested in. They just eat and propitiate their species. A human being also can live like that. But a human being can go beyond. So we need to determine as to what is the purpose of my life. And the higher the quality of your purpose, the higher the quality of your life. That simple as that. So when you set the goal of the self, it's not necessary that you will achieve it in this Janma itself. But you are at least walking in that direction. In fact, when you try to put in that effort and move in that direction, you may fall many times. Not easy. Not at all easy. And the world may laugh at you because you fall many times. But you as a sadhak should understand that every time I fall, I should fall like a rubber ball, not like a lead plate. And rise, bounce back. It's very difficult, isn't it? Succumbing to the material pressures, succumbing to the physical appetites or emotional needs or intellectual force, you know, pressures. We will succumb maybe. But what Vedanta says is don't stagnate. Keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. So Indra moved and finally reached the Brahma. So you need to assess what is worthy of pursuit. So those who fought and pondered, they understood that my purpose in life should be something meaningful, something fulfilling, something permanent. When I'm making a house to live, should I not make a house which will withstand all the natural calamities and this and that? So when they build houses in certain areas where there are it's earthquake prone, accordingly they'll build the foundation. Accordingly everything is done so that it has to withstand everything. So in my life also, I should set the goal which is permanent, not temporary, passing, fleeting, you know, not just that. So very rarely a person thinks and sets the goal. Majority of us just mechanically follow our sense appetite and we fulfill and we satisfy at that level. But we really cannot be satisfied totally. That's why that insecurity comes with us all the time. In spite of all our achievements, wealth, everything, is constant insecurity that continuously travels with us. So what should I pursue? Is it worthy of pursuing? So, something when I pursue, it should solve my problem permanently. By getting it, I should get that thorough satisfaction. So when tomorrow I die, there is no regrets whatsoever. Then we can say, I lived the life of fulfillment. And there is no regret. How many of us can say that? Still there is this kind of regret. I should have done that. I should have done this. Some regret is still existing. So that is the goal Indra sought. And he didn't give up. He continued with determination, humility, perseverance, and reached it. So even Agni and Vayu, they are great because they at least tried it. So having been born as a human being, we should try that. We should start applying for it now. You may be rejected, that's a different matter. But you must continue applying. Only when you keep on striking, you will get it.
So you need to put in your efforts. So this is what he says in these first three mantras of part one. First, Uma tells him that is Brahman, and he realizes that. And then he says these three were great because they went to the highest goal, and Indra reached Brahman. Now in 4 and 5, he gives Adesha. Adesha means, you can say, examples. See, this concept is called Upasana. Upasana, Upa-asana. Sitting near. Upasana means mental effort. Mentally thinking of that. It's not a physical, it's not just a physical effort, it's a mental effort. So, mentally dwelling on the Brahman, but Brahman is without gunas. So you can't really dwell on something which doesn't have gunas. So you conceive of something to represent that and dwell on that idol. That's called upasana. So some linga, some form, and the form can be gross or subtle. The subtlest form is Om. The gross form is the idol, so to say. So something which actually cannot be given an example, an attempt is made to give an example to keep our thoughts permanently on it. So Brahman, like Brahman, there is only one thing. There is no second. That's what we call it as Advaita. Advaita means not two. There may be somebody looking similar to you. Some similarities may be there. Some comparisons you can give. What comparisons can you give to Brahman? There is nothing else like Brahman to give comparison to Brahman. So that's why in Tirukural, in Tamil, there is a scripture called Tirukural, where Tiruvalluvar says, Tanakku Vomai Illadan Thal Sendar Kallal Manakkavalai Marchalari. What it means is, Tanakku Vomai Illadan means someone who has no comparison for himself or herself. That is Brahman. That is God. That is divinity. Something which is eternal, something which is all-pervading, something which is endless, something which is seedless. You cannot find anything else other than Brahman. So how to conceive that Brahman mentally and dwell on it? See, the whole idea in spirituality is to keep our mind on the higher. As you think, so shall you become. So, when you constantly dwell on the higher, you become the higher. And by constantly dwelling on this mundane stuff, we are now remaining mundane. All the time, gossip, gossip, gossip. Mundane stuff. We keep thinking, this property value has gone up, this has come down, this fellow has become number one now in this Forbes list, this, that. All the time we are dwelling on that. So, our mind keeps going in that, our vasanas dwell on that, we continue in that direction. So what is this spirituality? What is this effort? What is this purushartha? You try to keep your mind pulled from the mundane stuff and establish it in the higher. You establish it for a while, again it may fall, again put it back, again it may fall, again put it back, till it doesn't come back. So in that, one of the efforts is what we do once a week, and you should continue that every day. This is called satsang. Satsang is not having like-minded people around you. Satsang is having good people around you. Sound-minded people around you. Sound-minded stuff around you. Things that will help you to take you to the higher. That's called satsang. So, when you keep putting in that effort, you will keep your mind all the time on the higher. As you think, so shall you become. That's the idea. So, something which has no parallel, something which has no comparison, how to think about it? So, the Upanishad gives certain adesha, analogy. From that, you understand and keep your thoughts on it, dwell on it, some lingers, some symbols, to dwell upon that. It's called upasana, mental activity. So that is given in 4 and 5. So let's chant verses 4 and 5.
Tatyaisha adesho yadetad vidyuto vyadyutada itinyame mishada ityadidaivatam athadhyatmam yadetad gacchati vacha manonena chaitadupasmaratya vishnago sankalpaha.
So he gives three analogies here. One is lightning, other is blinking of the eyes, and the third is thoughts, the mind, the thoughts of the mind. Through them, he is trying to make us understand Ishvara, the Lord. Ishvara is Saguna Brahman. Brahman is Nirguna. So, here he gives these three analogies through which he is trying to keep our thoughts all the time on the highest. And we need to continuously dwell on these things. So he says, this is its analogy, that which is like the flash of lightning, that which is like the flash of lightning, that which is like the blinking of eyes, that's the cosmos. So what he's doing is, two examples is giving from the cosmos and one example from within. And when he gives two examples in the cosmos, one example is farthest, which is lightning. The other example is slightly closer to us, which is blinking of the eyes. And then the next one, within, the closest. So this method is using. So he says that which is like the flash of lightning. What happens when lightning comes? You are before lightning, you are in darkness. You don't see anything. There's nothing manifest. But when lightning strikes, momentarily, you see things and beings around. You see the world. And within few seconds or minutes, it's again withdrawn. So, similarly, from Ishvara, the Srishti happens, and in it, it is held, sthiti, and into it, it dissolves. Laya happens. So, the whole world comes out of Ishvara, stays in it, and disappears in it. So, Ishvara is the Srishti Sthiti Laya Karanam, creation, maintenance, and destruction. Creation, sustenance, and destruction. Ishvara is the cause of it. From Brahman, everything comes. It's sustained by Brahman. In it, it disappears. In it, it dissolves. So that concept is explained through this example. And the brilliant thing he says in this is, when it comes, it is momentary. From Brahman's angle, it is like a fraction of a second. the whole thing comes and goes. It's temporary. From our level, it is looking like days, you know. 50 years has gone. The other day, somebody was saying, we've been having our classes, I think, like last 10 or 11 years now. But suddenly when you look at it, you say, my God, 11 years has gone. But it looks like it's gone like this. So, this time is another interesting phenomenon. When you are happy, it flies. When you are unhappy, it drags. So, time is connected with the mind. No mind, no time. When you have no mind in the deep sleep, there is no time concept. When you wake up, when the mind comes again, the concept of time starts. So from our level, it looks like this is going on and on, the whole thing. Years passing, everything going, eternally things seems to be existing. But from Brahman's angle, it is just like this. Meaning it is so temporary, passing, fleeting. So by dwelling on this adesha, we also develop the detachment, vairagya, with reference to the world. And our thought gets established with that Brahman, which is equated to lightning, the light. Also, like Swamiji says in the book, one more thing that is there, which is, though the world is only there temporarily, we get involved in it. And we forget about Brahman. So you can look at it from that angle also. So all that he is trying to say here is that Brahman is like that lightning. Due to its light, the world is seen. The world comes into existence. It is staying there in it and it is drawn into it. So world is nitya, dependent. Brahman is satya, the independent aspect. So why would you give value to nitya? You will give value to satyam, isn't it? When there is a hero, let's say Sachin Tendulkar is there. And his wax statue is also there. Would you like to take pictures from Sachin Tendulkar or from standing next to the wax statue? I hope you say it is original Sachin Tendulkar, not wax. Wax may look a little better than him. Because wax will be maintained, always clean. He might have not, he might have just come from playing, so maybe sweating, looking tired. So you may like to take picture from the wax unit, standing next to the wax statue. But when there is original, why would you go to the duplicate? So he says, you need to dwell your thoughts like this. So you need examples from the world. So he's giving this example of lightning. You got to appreciate that these people are studying these Upanishads, risking their lives going into the Himalayas. Not like us sitting nicely in the air-conditioned room, having had our breakfast and ordered the lunch, told the menu, everything is ready. In between we have this class, happily, for sure we know lunch is there. But then they don't even know what is there, what is not there. So he is giving the example from nature and saying from this you can think of Brahman. So, when you love something and when you really want to achieve that, you will use anything and everything to get there. Isn't it? When you're so focused to get out of a place, like they show in those movies also. It actually happened also to many people. Like that movie, Cast Away, you know. The fellow is stuck in an island. He has to come out. He has to survive. He will use everything to survive and get out of the place. So like that, the Upanishad is giving the example of lightning. So from that you can understand. The whole thing has come from it and it goes into it. So that is Satyam. All this is Nitya. It's temporary. So you develop that Vairagya. And the next example it talks about is blinking of the eyes. When you open your eyes, the world comes. When you close, it's gone. So as long as you keep it open, it's sustained. So again the same principle is being explained from this. Lightning may happen once in a while, but blinking of eyes is happening constantly. So in the first example of lightning, when the lightning strikes, the world comes into existence, and when the lightning is withdrawn, again you plunge into darkness. Similarly, even though the light of the self within is making all this world known to us, we forget the self and we get lost in this world. Like we plunge into darkness after lightning. And in the next example of blinking, even though constantly the eyes are blinking, opening, closing, the world seems to be there continuously. Similarly, in the drishti of a jnani, the Atma is continuously present. So that way also you can understand this example of blinking of the eyes. But these two examples are taken from the cosmos to drive home this point of Ishvara so that you can keep your thoughts always dwelling on it. Then, so he says in the first fourth verse, he says, thus the cosmos. Then, now as regards to oneself, from one's personal within angle, that is, as the mind constantly entertains thoughts, so does it go to this. So what is happening is, there is thoughts constantly generated, propping up. Now, each thought through which you see the world, the thought of the object has to come together with the object, then the perception is there. Now what is happening to us is, when the thought comes, we get lost in the thought of the object. We get involved in the world. But that very thought itself can be used as an example, is it? How? Light per se cannot be seen. But when the light strikes the object, you will see the object. Actually what you see is object plus light. So whenever you are seeing the object, itself could be a prop for you to see the light or understand the light or take your thought to light. But for us today what happens is it goes to the object. So therefore he says this thought itself can be an adesha. Now, when there is smoke, from the smoke, what do you infer? You infer fire. So smoke could be a symbol to infer, understand fire. So thought is a symbol to infer, understand, reflect, ponder on God or divinity or pure consciousness. And the interesting thing is, smoke itself is created because of fire. So similarly, thought comes due to the pure consciousness. And whenever you have the thought, today we get lost in the object of the thought. But if we want to use it as a symbol, as an adesha, as an analogy, to keep our mind in that divinity, we can do so. So give the example of thoughts. And this keeps coming. So There is consciousness before the thought comes. There is consciousness after the thought. And there is consciousness during the thought also. In fact, consciousness as the substratum, you are able to see the thought. Light as the substratum, you are able to see the object. But when you see the object, you forget about the substratum. This is the problem. So every object when you see, it can be a reminder of God. In fact, that's why in Upanishad, once you come to Upanishadic level of thinking, anything and everything can be a place for you to be reminded of God. You don't have to necessarily go to a particular Himalayas or something and be reminded of God. Right where you are, you can see God, divinity. And that's what he said already. It is not what you see, but what makes you see. Prasibodha viditam matam amrutattvam hi vindate. Atmana vindate viryam vidyaya vindate. Verse number 4, chapter 2, part 2 of this Keno Upanishad we study. We'll go back and listen to that. We spent quite some time on that particular verse because it's a very important verse. Pratibodha viditam matam amrutattvam hi vindate. Each and every thought, every experience is an object of contemplation for you to think of Brahman. Because anything you see is actually a reflection of God, reflection of divinity. The problem is the troublemakers, just as an example I'm saying, your neighbors, your colleagues at home, is your daughter-in-law, mother-in-law, son-in-law, all these people whom you believe as troublemakers, they can also be a prop for you to see the divinity. Muskila. When you can't see divinity in good things, how can you see things in which you are getting troubled? But actually the truth is, in everything you can see divinity. So he gives these three analogies. One is from within, adhyatmika. Two from without, adi bhautika, adi daivika. So, adi daivika is lightning, adi bhautika is eyes blinking, adhyatmika is thoughts. So, three analogies. You have thoughts cropping up every time, eyes blinking, and light striking and seeing the objects of the world, lightning. In the modern world, you don't have to wait for lightning. You go into a dark room, you switch on the light. So there is calm. You can be constantly dwelling upon Brahman while you are going through all these experiences. But the problem is, you get lost in the world. So, where do you know Brahman? You don't have to know Brahman by going to Himalaya, a special room into which you go and then you sit down there, wearing special clothes, eating special food. Only then I will reach Brahman. Nothing like that. Right now. But the problem is, you are lost. So right now you have to see, I need certain purifications from within. So those are discussed in Mantra 7. No, not 7, 8. So therefore, here, he is saying these analogies he is giving so that we can keep our mind meditating on it all the time. So just like the thoughts can go into the past and future, the Atma can go into all the experiences. So that Atma you can be reminded of and keep your mind dwelling on when every thought pops up. So in Tamil they say Vallavanukku Pullu Maayudham. Vallavanukku Pullu Maayudham means for a strong person even a blade of grass can be a weapon. He'll use it to fight with the enemy. So when you are sitting in the Himalaya, the Guru is giving three examples, three analogies to make you compare something which is incomparable almost he conveys it with these examples so that you can keep your mind aloft all the time dwelling upon it. So that's what this is saying. That is from the cosmic level, this is from the individual level. Thoughts. So therefore he says, Sasya Esha Adesha. Sasya means of the Brahman. It's means that Brahman's Adesha means analogy. That Brahman is Ishvara. That Ishvara, how do you see? Ishvara is the creator, sustainer and destroyer. Everything gets dissolved into it. So, through these examples you can see. So, and also you develop that Vairagya, which is essential. As long as you haven't developed Vairagya, our mind will continue going to the world. So, being in the world is not the problem. Mind going into the world is the problem. So the challenge we face is to be in the world but keep the mind on the divinity. The easiest thing to do is leave the world and go. And still keep dwelling on the world. Is a problem. Majority of us do that. Run away. Is he a problem? Run away. Running away is not a solution. You have to take the mind away from it. So to take the mind away from it, you need something to hold on to and keep thinking about it. So therefore he gives these analogies. It's a brilliant way of helping you to keep your thoughts there. So, like flash of lightning, like blinking of eyes, and like mind constantly entertaining thoughts. These three examples, these three analogies can help you to dwell, keep your mind on that place. Then the next one, verse number 6.
Tadhatadvanam nama tadvanam ityupasitavyam saya etadevam veda mihaina go sarvani bhutani samvanchanti.
Tadhatadvanam nama. Tadvanam means tadvanam. Vanam also means forest. Vanam also means worshipful one. From that vanam only vandanam has come. Worshipful one. This is what I was saying. What is really worthy of worship? Worship also means identification. You go into the mandir and you are worshipping God. But you are thinking of something worldly. That means you are actually worshipping world. People are thinking, oh, this fellow is thinking about Brahman, Atman, God and all that. But your mind is thinking of something else. So it's not where you are, it's where your thoughts are. So what is really worthy of identifying, what is really worthy of worshipping? He says, that is this Brahman. Everything else is not worthy of worshipping. See, in Islam also they say, only thing to which we pay obeisance is Allah. This is the meaning. All these are unfortunately misunderstood or whatever. But the only thing that is really worthy of my head bowing down is Brahman. So in Vedanta, in our culture, in our way of living, Hinduism, when we bow down to the feet of a Mahatma, we are not bowing down to that personality. The very first chapter of Vedanta Treatise book, Swamiji says, the role of Vedanta is to pull man out of his infatuation to personalities and educate him on eternities. We are all, you know, infatuated with personalities. Lord Buddha, you go and read his quotations. He says, don't follow any personality and we follow Buddha. Buddha's nail, Buddha's tooth, Buddha's glass, Buddha's this, Buddha's that, everybody wants to keep it. Now, we are not ridiculing that. Maybe it's inspiring you to follow. I don't know. As long as it's not a fashion statement or something. So, the point is, we have to move out of personalities. Only thing that is really worthy of worship, they call it Allah, we call it Brahman. That's all. And he says, the nama, the name, the identity of it is worshipful. Only thing that is worthy of identifying with worshipping is Brahman. And therefore you should meditate upon that. See, the word meditate, dhyanam, in English they say that, you know, like, what are you doing? I meditate. I'll meditate upon it. I'll meditate upon it, I'll think about it. So the only thing that you are worthy of spending your time upon is knowing this. Tatta tadvanam nama. Tadvanam ityupasatyam. Upasavyam. So what he's saying is, you can worship that. You should meditate upon that. What happens when you meditate upon that? When you throw, this example I gave, I think last class, iron ball, it's not my example, it's Adi Shankara's example. Iron ball, when you throw it into a furnace, when you throw the iron ball into the furnace, what happens to that iron ball? It becomes fire. 1500 degrees Celsius, fire is going on inside the furnace. So the iron ball is put there, the iron ball becomes fire. So when you constantly identify with Atma, what happens? You become Atma. So when you worship that Atma, which is pervading the entire species, so when you therefore, you know, bring both your palms together and say Namaskar, you are saying Nama to the Atma in the opposite person. And that person also says Namaskar. When you say Namaskar, they will also say Namaskar. World is a reflection. What you give comes back to you. So when you say Namaha, you will get Namah. So he says, all beings very much love him indeed who knows it thus. The whole world worships that person. When you start respecting Atma, you start getting the respect. You shouldn't do it for that purpose. He's not saying it, at least for that purpose you do. No, he's not saying that. It happens eventually, automatically. Mahatma Gandhi worshipped the nation. So everybody worships Mahatma Gandhi. Same thing to Nelson Mandela. When you rise above the lower things and identify with the higher, people get inspired by you. They worship you. When you love everyone, everybody loves you. When you identify with Atma, you are identifying with every being. That's love. Love is identification. So therefore you get that same kind of respect and regards from everybody else. Automatically the whole world loves you because you rise to that stage. Mahatma Gandhiji lived what he talked about, isn't it? A fellow who shot him, for whatever reasons it might be, we are not getting into the politics of it. He is able to say, let him go. Ram, 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 Ram was the word. Those were the words that came out of his mouth. And he said, let him go. So, that's why he is worshipped. So, that's what he is saying here. That is worshipful. indeed, all these things that you are identified with is not worthy. You are worshipping all the fake wax statues. Get to the original source. The other day, I am reminded of that now. I don't know why. In the newspaper I saw, in most of these temples, and especially in certain places, they are mentioned. The Vigraha there, idol, is duplicated. Originally stolen and sent to some other country. They made a duplicate there and kept it there. I don't know what all people can do in mind. So, it's like that we are doing. We are worshipping the reflection, not the source. Really speaking, that is worship. So, if you see, thoughts are there. This side of the thought is the world. Thought and the world come together, isn't it? That's why in Vedanta we say, when you woke up this morning, the world came into existence. When did the world begin? When they ask this question. In Vedanta we say, when I woke up this morning. When I woke up, the world comes in. So, me and the world come together, and when I see the world, I get involved in it. But in the same thing, I have to just go back. Now my thoughts are going forward. If I can make my thoughts go backwards, then what happens? Beyond the thoughts, this side of the thought is the world. This side of the thought is Brahma, pure consciousness. When the pure consciousness strikes the thought, you say, I know. You are worshipping everything that you know. And he is saying, nothing in this world is worthy of worship. All that you know through your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, they are not worthy of identifying. They are only worthy from the worldly angle, like Swami Ramtita says, iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold. For your transactional purpose, only. That's why they say in Islam, we don't bow down to anything else. If you understand that concept, it's a fantastic concept. There's nothing else other than Allah, which is worthy of identifying. All this tamasha is meant for that. But, it's like, you have to use the car to go to the destination. But the car is so beautiful. You get involved in the car. You are sitting on the seat. You are hugging the seat. You don't feel like getting out of the car. What nonsense. So this body, this mind, this intellect, this whole thing needs to be used for that purpose. But the problem is man gets involved. So the Upanishad is saying this. That is the worshipful one indeed. Name itself is Tadvam. Worshipful. And by worshipping that, you become worshipful. Because you are also, like iron ball that is put in fire becomes fire, you also become that. That is worshipful. So all these, whether what he spoke in verse 4, 5, and even here in 6, whatever he says, brilliantly communicates to us that we need to develop the vairagya with reference to world. Question what you are identifying with today. Like Shakespeare says, what a fall was there, my countrymen. It's fallen to this level. The whole discourse and everything comes to this level. It's very unfortunate. And we get dragged into it. It's very tempting. Get dragged into it. But even in the ridiculous stuff, you can actually find divinity. But it's not easy. It's very difficult. Very difficult. And we fail to see it in sublime. How can we see it in ridiculous? But jnanis, they see it even in ridiculous. In fact, for them, there is nothing ridiculous. Everything is divine. Because divinity alone is, nothing else is. That's the level they have reached. So when a person identifies with all beings, he wouldn't want to hurt anything. Even a person who hurts him, he wouldn't want to hurt him. See, just understand this. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. What Newton's third law also says. So if you are giving rubbish to the world, you will get back rubbish. So if you give hatred, you will get hatred. So if you give love, you will get love. But don't give love because you will get love. Then it will become business. But the truth is that. So if somebody is giving hatred to you, why is he giving? Because he is ignorant of this law. You should watch that movie Invictus. Talks about the Nelson Mandela's life. Where then after they got the freedom, the same thing the blacks wanted to do what the whites did. They wanted to send them away, they want to close the clubs, that only blacks should be playing. All these kind of things come there. Then he tells them, listen, this is not the country we wanted. If we do this, then what's the difference between us and the whites? They did that. Now you want to do that to them? I want all the colors, everything in this country. So if you go to South Africa, you see that. The blacks are there, the whites are there, the Indians are there, the colored are there. Everybody is there. So he said, no, this is the country we wanted. He was able to influence them, convince them. 26 or 27 years he was in jail. And 6 by 6, I think, is the size of the room. So when you rise above the body, mind, intellect, the world pays obeisance to you. This is what Jesus Christ said. Knock and it shall be opened. Seek and it shall be given. Knock and it shall be given means what? Knock the doors of the highest. Seek the highest. The lower also will be given to you. But he will not knock the highest. So, tadvanam iti upasitavyam. This is how you should do upasana. Upasana means mentally think of it. So when you deal with anything worldly, you understand these are all for transaction purpose. So you give that value, but real value is for that. Because that's the one which is giving value to these things. So, that is how I understand. Once I keep dwelling my thoughts on it, then I will practice detachment with reference to the lowest. So, when I am mentally detached, it's like having a grease surface, you know. So, nothing sticks to it. So, the world doesn't stick to that mind. In us, everything sticks. So, a person who is clean is worshipful. So, that's what he said. That is worshipful indeed, which is known as tadvanam. That should be meditated upon. Means constantly thought of. Meditation means constant thinking. How constant thinking means what? You sit down and keep thinking about it. No, that's not what he's saying. Constantly thinking about means when you are interacting in the world. How I can think of it constantly when I'm interacting in the world? by this understanding. That whatever value this has is drawing it from that source. So thus you are constantly paying obeisance to that. Then you will not have value for these things. When you function like that, then the world pays obeisance to you. But if you are involved in the world, you drag yourself to that level, then you don't get the respect from them. So therefore he says, you need to constantly meditate upon that Brahman, whose nama itself is Vachchasulva. Then what is the effect that happens? All beings very much love him. Indeed, who knows it does. Because once you know it, you become it. In this, there is no question of knowing and then becoming later. This knowing is experienceable. Actually, with this verse, the guru keeps quiet. He had to say, whatever he had to say is finished. But then Shishya continues. That's how 7, 8, 9, 3 more mantras are given. So when you worship, when you identify with Brahman and function in this world, you will eventually become Brahman. You will become the center of the entire world. Then, like he shows in this diagram here, in the book, you love all love you. Because you identify with the center, you will be able to influence the world. And the world cannot have any impact upon you. So that's why he says you need to identify with that Brahman and worship that Brahman. So technically, whatever the guru wanted to say, he has said and he stops here. But Shishya asks and then continues 7, 8, 9. We'll see it next week. Let's conclude now. Om Purnamadat Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyaiva Buddhyatmanava Prakrte Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmahi Narayana Eti Samarpayami.